and welcome to this special episode of Mission Makers, brought to you from Davos, Switzerland, during the World Economic Forum, where me and my team were really lucky to be on the ground curating some amazing spaces and discussions this year, from the future of mobility with the astronaut Nicole Stott, who has spent over 100 days in space, to curating workshops around neuroscience and primal movement at the House of Balance, where I exclusively premiered my music track Infinite Being that features Deepak Chopra. I'll be interviewing key visionaries and thought leaders from these communities, such as the Female Quotient, 100 Women at Davos, Finnish Flow, and many more over the next few weeks to share the best of our collaborative insights on implementing solutions while digging deep into our collective consciousness to take responsibility for the protection and preservation of this world. So let's dive straight into today's conversation with Mark Terrell, the founder of UnDavos, which is undoubtedly the biggest underground community of young global leaders, global shapers, tech pioneers and futurists, really asking the big questions at Davos. Hey Mark, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully well, thanks. And you? All good?
Yes. Yeah, all good. As you're saying, just recharged from Davos just about.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. So you know, you're running UnDavos. I think it's almost close to 2,000 members now. It's definitely one of the most prolific communities out there in Davos. Tell us a little bit more about the community and like why you started it.
So it's in total be around more like 4,000 or 5,000. There's about 2,000 direct members in Telegram.
Okay.
But then quite a few of the people, one person is in UnDavos, but then they might have 5 or 6 people in their team. And so not everybody is in it. So the UnDavos world is around 4,000 or 5,000 people. Superficially, it's about how do you find a place to stay? How do you work out something to do? So superficially, there's not a lot to it. There's a Telegram group and there's a Google Doc that explains how things will work. But there is obviously much, much more to it. And it's a way of pretty much how do you help people do Davos, which is this very special week during the year when you have so many decision makers from all different walks of life, from different countries. But how do you take advantage of this concentrated period of time where, let's say, in quotes, everybody is there to get things done? And so by making it easier for people to go at scale, that's sort of pretty much, let's say, sort of the core of what UnDavos has been about. But then there's, as I said, there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I hear you've got some 10-year master plans, maybe even longer than 10 years.
Well, yes, I have a 25-year plan to change the whole world for better. I've then just finished the first, within there, there was what the first 10-year plan for the sort of first iteration of the sort of changing world of Davos. And now we're just moving into the next 10-year plan.
Mm. My plan. What for you is the reason for like starting this community? Because I know you've been going since 2008 and obviously things have changed a lot since then. So what was the primary motive for you to kind of set this up?
So in 2008, I mean, I had a very good Davos experience myself, but then I was a WEF member. I mean, it would have cost 30 or 40,000 for me to be there as a technology pioneer. And that was sort of the cheap tickets time. So, but for me, I found that Davos was extremely useful from a business perspective, because at least from the WEF side, the right people for as prospective clients were there. So it was very transactional, networking was fantastic. But I had a chance encounter with a guy from Zimbabwe. He and I then ended up inventing crowdsourced election monitoring. And that method of having thousands of people take pictures of election results in Zimbabwe changed the outcome of an entire country's election to stop a dictator stealing an election. Well, that was such a nice experience, and that helped a country of 13 million people. And that method was then used subsequently in many different countries, including Senegal and Nigeria afterwards. I then thought, well, this sort of serendipitous moment of magic, this should happen more often. So I was WEF in 2009, and I began to switch from being more sort of transactional to more relationship building. And then I missed 2010, but 2011 was the first time that I came back with a hotel badge, and I'd figured out how sort of the system worked. And then I began to tell more people and more people and more people. And so right now, yeah, so the UnDavos community directly is 2,000. And then overall, it's more like around 4,000 or 5,000, so that they can all have this sort of magical opportunity to make these connections.
And so through this period of growth, like, what do you think has been the biggest impact of the community being at Davos? Is it the change that you know, a lot of us are obviously driven to achieve? What would you say has been some of the measurements of the impact?
Well, so Davos before used to be full of old white men. So now Davos is a lot less white, it's a lot less male, and it's a lot less old. So fundamentally, that's because if we make it very, very expensive to go, the only people in whatever the old-fashioned society that can go are old white men.
Yeah.
However, what Davos did as a with the sort of superficial Telegram groups is that it made it easier for people to come that normally wouldn't have been invited. It allows people that have come once to go back again, even if the WEF wouldn't invite them back a second time. And then it just means that the sort of Davos is dramatically more relevant over the years, Davos as the town and this week of time, than the WEF is, because the WEF is still full of old white men.
Yeah, it sure
So that
is.
I think would be the biggest change.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see that change over the few years. So, undoubtedly, and making it more accessible, I think, is one of the key things that Undavos really provides. Even, just from the get-go, as you say, from joining all the way to actually coming out there and the community. And I think I read something like you guys are saying that just even that Undavos beds group contributes to like more than 1 million in revenue for the accommodation supplies out in the community in the village.
Well, it's more like around, I mean, it's probably at least 6 or 7 million this year.
Wow. Okay. Nice.
So, and the majority of that money goes to local people.
Yeah.
And if there wasn't this type of apartment sharing, very few people would be able to go to Davos.
100%. Because as
Because.
we know that Airbnbs cancel all the time, right? As soon as they get a better offer.
Well, and then what happens is that the other problem at Davos, I mean, so there's some very interesting sort of life lessons from Davos. They're probably worth a book at some point, but. If you like, let's say you rent an apartment in Davos, and let's say it costs 15,000 for the week, which is quite expensive, but still, it's Switzerland. So it's Switzerland is always going to be double normal prices anyway. And it's a tiny little town. So the town of Davos during in summer has 10,000 inhabitants. In winter, it's 17,000 inhabitants. But during Davos week, there's about 30,000 people that come into this place. So it's a tiny little place, and there's no availability whatsoever. That means that unless you're able to get an apartment and share it, you really can't stay in Davos. But relatively few people have enough money for themselves to get an apartment. And even if they could, it's quite lonely. So it's actually better for people to then say, well, wouldn't it be great if I have an apartment? I need 3 or 4 people to share the rent. Otherwise, I can't afford the rent myself. So this, connecting people together to sort of make apartments. Allows people to stay. But what it's also doing without people really realizing it is that it begins to get across some rules that in order to do Davos, you need to share things and you need to help other people.
Yeah.
And those are rules that didn't exist beforehand. So WEF World is pretty much own things and help yourself.
Yeah. No,
So
absolutely.
in fact, what Davos is doing, it's changing the rule set of the world.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. And so let's talk about 2023. What were some of the highlights and key takeaways for you this year?
So we've just come off, let's say, 3 years of COVID, and we had the May 22 had got slotted in, which it was a little bit strange. It was sort of in spring, the weather was fantastic, but there was a lot of uncertainty. People didn't quite know what was going on. In 23, there was a lot more certainty. Sort of, we've done this before. We know how this works. Davos 23 was about 20% bigger than 2020. Maybe even bigger than that. So we begin to go back onto the normal track. I think other things then is that we see sort of more and more venues being taken up with events. Because what happened before, if you like this, there's really a sort of schism between old WEF and new WEF or old Davos and new Davos. To give you an example, when you walk down the promenade, you have shops. Now, if you walk down the promenade sort of out of season, many of the shops are closed because it's a ski town. If you walk down the promenade a week before Davos, the WEF week takes place, you've got a hat shop or you have a children's bookshop. But then if you walk down the week of Davos, of the WEF week, you have Accenture, you have Salesforce, you have India Pavilion, you have Malaysia, and then that. Well, what's interesting is that in the past, and let's say 4, 5, 6 years ago, these places were largely dedicated towards lounges for private meetings. So you'd have your, it's the pet shop, it gets turned into private wealth management, private meeting space. And this would be for private meetings, very much an old style of world, the sort of the backroom type of deals. What I think happened in 2020, you could see it beginning to happen. 22 was very strongly there. If you look at the buzz and the energy, there's no energy whatsoever with private meeting spaces. And yet you'd walk past the blockchain hub or some of the other places, and you'd have people spilling out from the street because they want to get into an event, a panel session. So gradually what has happened is that more of the places that had private meeting spaces have now decided to turn those physical areas into event spaces. And that means then that instead of having whatever, eight chairs and a couple of couches for 10 people to have a meeting, you then end up with 30 chairs, 40 chairs, five people at a panel, videographer filming stuff, and that allows you to share content. But what happens with content is the content brings community. So I was, for example, at the Accenture Lounge and they did a session on digital wallets, and it was packed with people that were interested in digital wallets. So even then, for the sort of this again, there's this sort of schism, this break between private meetings, one-on-one things, into these very large-scale groups of people gathering together. It's pretty much a game changer, but it also pulls more and more people into Davos who also need a place to stay and something to do. So just it's spiraling out. It just gets bigger and bigger. It can't be stopped either.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the promenade come to life in those weeks before, and it literally is like it takes about like less than a week before everything's all it's all kitted out and the street completely transforms. And I mean, I was there for a few weeks before Davos, and you know, it was pretty lonely. I mean, it's pretty lonely. There's, I mean, obviously I was with friends, but you know, just the promenade itself on like a Saturday night, it was like totally empty until this group kind of comes through in full force.
Well, and this is what, now, but going back, so back in 2008, there was no promenade. So back in 2008, what happened then is that you had Aberdeen Asset Management had a little shop next to the Belvedere. Zurich Insurance had the library next to the Congress Centre. You had events taking place at the Belvedere, and it was only a few people who decided to, whatever, take over the piano bar at Hotel Europe as an alternative to the boring WEF strategic partner parties, like the McKinsey party. So what would happen is that the cool people would then leave the party full of consultants and accountants and lawyers, go over to Hotel Europe, but there was nothing in between. And in fact, back in 2008, the whole town was dead, 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 dead. Because when the World Economic Forum takes over Davos during WEF week, they contribute very little to the local economy. No WEF attendees are going to buy baby clothing. So what happens is that most of the shop owners would leave, but also the inhabitants would leave. So it was actually very strange. In 2008, 9, even sort of up to about 14, 15, the whole town was empty. Now, what's now happened though is that more and more people rent their apartments. More people then begin to stay to do work at events. So right now, if we look at 23 and beyond, it's much more tied to the local community than ever was there before. But you've gone from this completely empty, lonely place in 2008 to being this buzzing, vibrant hub of serendipity. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's phenomenal. And it
Absolutely.
was exactly part of my master plan.
And what were some of the parties that stood out for you this year? I know you guys hosted your own one on the Friday, I think it was. Or was it the Thursday? I think, yeah, it was the Thursday at Davos.
Thursday, we did the masquerade party. So so I used to do more parties in previous years because then you get to meet very interesting people and have conversations till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Over time, I like doing the parties less. Particularly this year, I had work to do, so I adopted at least the minimum rule of every second drink should be water. Very sensible. Because otherwise, to give people an idea, you start doing cocktail receptions at 6. You switch over to doing a dinner thing from 7:30. You switch from a dinner thing to a nightcap thing around 9. Then you switch to a party thing around 10:30, 11. Then you switch to an after-party hangout at Barry's or Piano Bar until 3 or 4 o'clock. That's a lot of awake time and a lot of whatever, carousing and networking time. Now, you still end up with serious business conversations at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Of course.
So, with serious people, it just means that you get to see them in a different context. And so therefore you meet them on a much more human level and you have much more sort of direct conversations as opposed to when you're sort of formal sitting in a suit exchanging business cards. Parties that I went to, I did get dressed up and I had my tuxedo for Arabian Nights. I didn't go there too long just because I don't personally like crowds that much. And then we had the Undavos Masquerade ball party clubbing thing. That was on Thursday. So I had bought, since I thought the people didn't wear masks normally, like we're fed up with wearing this mask, so it's time to wear this mask. So I bought about 300 masks, cat ears, and other stuff, and I just donated them to the party. And that was a nice event. That was really good because land space, at least like the space at the Rathia Centre, which had been called land space, has a really good sound system.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying today's show. And of course, if you are, a little review or share with your friends would be much appreciated. But I just want to take a quick pause to share some interesting news that Mission Makers has unexpectedly grown into becoming a boutique podcast agency. And for the last year and a half, we've secretly been producing content for some high-impact brands from tech unicorns in Silicon Valley to disruptive companies at Davos. So if you're thinking of starting your own show and you're looking for some help, then send us a message because we would absolutely love to bring your story to life and help you amplify your content while really connecting on a much deeper level with your audiences. Now, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, the boys did a really good job with that Void sound system this year. It was a very, very nice system.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some tips. So you've mentioned, I think, a great tip there about every second drinking water, because as you've touched upon, 6 o'clock, the gears shift a little bit to that evening mode, but also you've obviously got the whole day as well, right? Where, your brain's flat out on focus. And then you need to keep that kind of, focus, at 3 a.m. if the conversation arises, or you'd want to obviously capture the best of that value, right? So talking about tips, what would be some of, and I know this could probably be a whole podcast episode in itself, but what would be your kind of high level tips on really maximizing the experience for our audience listening who are coming to Davos and also maybe people who might be coming for the first time?
So a few things then is that there is a huge amount of value, particularly if you're coming in from, let's say, far overseas, about coming in on Friday or Saturday rather than coming in on Monday. Because if you've just come off a whatever 16-hour flight and you jump straight into Davos, you're not going to be really functioning for a day and a half, and it's too expensive to be at low performance. So that is sort of something really to think about then is coming in earlier. You chill, you acclimatize, and then leave on Friday or Saturday is typically the best way to do it.
And maybe you ski.
Well, I mean, you can do. I mean, I wouldn't ski afterwards, mostly because you sort of get physically wrecked when you do this Davos thing. And I wouldn't want to put myself at risk because my legs aren't particularly stable afterwards. But people do skiing, and the skiing is fantastic because the slopes will be empty.
Of course. No. I mean, I like my tip would be go ski before, come a few days earlier, ski before when it's all, when it's all a bit less hectic. I agree. If I had to ski after this whole thing, it would be too intense.
And so, I mean, other things as well is that eat whenever you can. So it's very easy. And in previous years, you sort of, if you arrive slightly, so for example, there's one of the great events is the Swedish lunch. Fantastic event, beautiful sunshine. It's like the fortune smiles on the Swedes because they've got a great location and it's always sunny. The thing though is that I know that if you have too many conversations, they run out of food. So what you need to do is you need to pretty much not look at anybody, go straight to the food, get your food, because otherwise they're going to run out of food. Because they're very, very generous in inviting so many people, but that means that at a certain point they've run out of food. So yeah, so the other rule of Davos is to eat whenever you can. I mean, it's quite normal for me. So we had Toblerone chocolates at the place that I was at. So for me, having chocolate for breakfast is quite normal for Davos. I wouldn't do it outside of Davos, but it's quite normal to do that eating. Next thing is the you do really need to be connected into the Telegram group for Davos, and you need to be on the Davos Week app to know what's going on. Otherwise, you'll be walking down the streets and then you'll hear the buzz and you'll see the people, but you won't have a clue what's going on. So I genuinely feel very sorry for the WEF delegates because the World Economic Forum doesn't want the World Economic Forum delegates to know that there's anything other than the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
So these people are completely lonely. They don't know about sort of breakfast events with the CEO of Microsoft. They don't know about whatever lunches. They don't know about dinners. They don't know about the Swedish lunch unless they just happen to speak to somebody sometimes on the train on the way in. Like, oh, well, I was going to do a very boring lunch. Do you want to come to the Swedish lunch? What's that? So, and this is that the WEF hasn't yet figured out how to work with the side community. However, clearly the side community will get bigger and bigger and bigger. If the WEF decides to move Davos, the side community will move to whichever city they decide to go to. So the old WEF has to just accept that this new world is there, and they either can keep fighting it and lose, or they can work with it and make it beneficial for everybody. So, but yeah, so then it's the, but you need to know what's going on to get the most value. What other good tips that I would have? Be cool. Assume that every action that you have will have consequences. So if you go around being an arsehole, there will be consequences.
100%. The community is small, you know, people find out things for sure. And you do come across quite a few people who are there to kind of, you know, to try and maybe make, like, they might be bad actors trying to make the most out of the situation. And you stumble upon them every year. So, and the community
it's the kind of thing where somebody was aware of somebody saying, I've wired you some money. But then it was found out that wire was fake. So somebody has gone through the effort to create a fake wire transfer. Now, why do they do that? Really stupid, because it's still there. Well, that information then got handed over to Interpol. Turns out there was an active investigation into the person. And so that person, that whole group, basically was then speedily removed because we have no interest in being connected to bad actors. So as soon as we're aware of it, kick everything out.
Exactly.
But you just have to expect that if there's a community of 2,000 people, there's a lot of interesting connections that people have. And there's also quite a strong level of commitment to making sure the community is good and continues to be good. And that either means that they're bringing good people in, but it also means taking some action over people who are at least perceived to be bad actors. And if they are found to actually be bad actors, to then basically expel them.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure you know, must get asked, as I do, for so many speakers looking for opportunities. So, like, what advice would you give those people who are, like, looking to join panels and stuff?
So Davos is an incredible platform, whether it's just the people physically in the room with you or the beyond Davos, which is sort of before, during and after Davos, but outside of this sort of little ski town. So what you need to do is that, I mean, so there's just, so maybe another secret is that Davos is all about money, but not in terms of money, conspiracy theories, and all of this bullshit nonsense. It's that even if you are to have, so the minimum price pretty much to stay in Davos in a bed, which you might be sharing with another human who you may never have met before, was around 3,000 Swiss francs. What it means then, I mean, that's because you take the price of the rent and you divide it by four, and that's just what it works out at. So it means that Davos is not someplace to go to if you're sort of cheap, if you can't afford it, if your NGO can't raise money, then you just can't be there. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But then it means that once you go there, and just being aware that there are business models that different venues have as to get speakers. The other thing is that when you look at the streets of Davos, every single person almost has been in a magazine. So no matter how cool you are, I guarantee you that the person sitting behind you in the funicular will be as good as you or better. So I think this is a struggle for a lot of people coming in as first timers, because they might perceive themselves to be just the best thing the world has ever seen. And so let's say you have some special expertise in space. That's cool. But the guy over there builds supersonic aircraft. The guy over there does So yes, you might know something about. So, but I do think that there are plenty of, because there are more and more venues, it does mean that there's more options to speak. But then you have to be aware that sometimes there is a pay to speak model for some of the venues. Every promenade shop that you look at will end up spending between 700,000 and a million Swiss francs for a week. So every single one of those venues drops about 200,000 per day of cost. The cost has to be paid by somebody.
Yeah,
So therefore, you will have certain places will have pay to speak business models, but I mean that's not crazy in other conferences either. And if it's not worth it for you, then don't pay. Easy. But also, though, there's a capacity problem because it only lasts for 5 days, but really not much happens on Friday. Less happens on Monday, but I think gradually more things will happen on Monday and Sunday as well. But there are relatively few speaking slots. Now, what I did do with the Undavos community, we put together an Undavos summit. So we had 30 panel sessions on topics such as oceans, conservation, next generation wealth. Each one of those things had five speakers. So that at least gave just that single big question format alone gave a platform for 150 people to speak. And then you just had to know that we were looking for speakers as and when we put the call out. Because if we were too late, that's unfortunate, but that's not our fault. That's your fault for not knowing about it. But
Exactly.
yes, there are these opportunities.
Yeah, if you didn't check those Telegram groups, there's no chance you would have been able, well, maybe some people do scroll up the 700 messages, but yeah, you need to keep an eye out on those things because they do get shared on the groups like you mentioned.
Well, and there is also some level of personal responsibility. I mean, it's like people aren't children. Okay, some of them are behave like children, but and some children are really, really smart. But right now, I have people saying, "Mark, can you please inform me about this?" It's like, no, because there's 2,000 other people. Why on earth would I make a special effort for you, given that there's other people?
Exactly.
So it just people have to sort of take the initiative themselves. And if you aren't able to take the initiative, then Davos probably isn't the right place for you.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also adopting a mindset of it's a marathon, not a sprint. If you can afford to be there and, invest that time into actually kind of creating relationships, right? And the good things will come organically from that. Rather than kind of like being ego driven about like, I need to be speaking at, the best panels and have that visibility
Well,
everywhere for my network.
yeah, so Davos is very much about relationships. I mean, people do business with people that they like and people that they've developed trust for. So I think the poor quality networking at Davos is to say, "Hi, here's me, pitch, 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 pitch." You don't ask the other person a question. That networking might work well at TechCrunch or it might work well at some other conference, but it just doesn't work in Davos. Or if it works with people that are not the right quality that you're hoping for. So what works better is that you connect with people on a human level, find out what they do. You might then end up meeting them two or three times, which is really good. And then based on that, you can then have more serious conversations afterwards to do the follow-ups, to do some contracts and do some sort of serious business afterwards. So it's about relationship building. I think the other thing about Davos that's worthwhile mentioning is that you should play Davos over years, not over one time.
Exactly. Marathon, not sprint.
Because you get access to it's a marathon, but not a sprint. And it's a marathon over years. Because what happens is that the first year that you're there, you're overwhelmed. You don't know how things work. It'll still be brilliant. Second year, you go back, you're still overwhelmed for different reasons. It'll still be brilliant. The third year, people begin to know who you are and you get access to better things. Now, some people are able to get access to the good things immediately because they're sneaky or they just can figure stuff out. But the thing is, though, that even if they're able to sneak into the JP Morgan dinner, they don't belong at the JP Morgan dinner. So therefore, they don't have the right conversations that could be had if you did it in the right way. But it's a game played over years. And anybody that doesn't play the game over years typically doesn't come back.
Yeah, so true. What would you like to see more of next year?
So I think that I'd like to see more depth into certain topics because I think that the nature about how these venue spaces work, it means that you can have, let's say, an hour and a half on aerospace, which is a and then space, massively important industry, but you don't have 8 hours. So what I see happening in 24 is going to be more spaces for industries where the companies will collaborate together to organize whatever industry-specific content at very high level across maybe 10 or sort of maybe 10 different industries. So that I'd like to get deeper into narrow topics. Next thing is I'm looking at beyond Davos. So the what it means then is that I mean there are millions of people that could be engaged in the conversation. There are millions of people that they believe that Davos is this conspiracy theory of whatever, of some crazy German guy who's controlling the world as a puppet. By the way, very, very stupid conspiracy theory. But that's because they don't feel as though they have any connection. So I think that a lot of the venues, including my UnDavos Summit, we need to do a, well, there's an opportunity for us to go beyond the walls of Davos during the event and after, to then just get the content out there, which will help those people that are speaking, but it'll also help just increase the knowledge of what's going on in the world. So that's beyond Davos. And I think the next one is how to sort of systemize more people that are either day tripping into Davos, or they're staying, let's say, an hour out, but you make it more convenient for them to get in and out in a sustainable and sort of environmentally sensible way. Because that then makes, because already, I mean, one of the big things that I see that's changed in Davos now is that back in 2008, there used to be three taxi cabs. But actually, maybe this is a sort of a nice way of just understanding how the world has changed so much. In 2008, imagine you're at the X bar, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you need to get back to Clausthus. There were only three taxi cabs in Davos in that time. What happened is that there were four people waiting for the taxis. The first person jumps in the taxi cab, they pay 150 Swiss to go to sort of to Clausthus. Second person, 150 Swiss to go in the same direction. Third person, same direction, same amount of money. The fourth person, me, I have to wait for an hour because the taxis have to come back again. So what happened is then that old world, it was extremely inefficient, it was extremely expensive, and it was very unfriendly and very lonely. Well, now what's happened is that now people do connect together to say, hi, I'm leaving at 2 o'clock, who wants to share a cab? And I'm on expenses, I'll pay. You have this type of conversation. But what is also, I think, a game changer in Davos in 22 and now in 23 is that there are tons, not just of taxi cabs, but there are tons and tons of Ubers. And what Ubers make it, even if it's whatever, 29 Swiss francs to go 5 minutes, is that before to go, let's say a 20-minute walk in Davos begins to get hard work, particularly for people that are somewhat infirm or people that are worried about ice. Quite often they couldn't go too far off the promenade just because it was physically too far to go and too far to go back. Well, now because of Ubers and because of Telegram and people sharing stuff, it means that there's a lot of places in the town of Davos, both in Platz and Dorf, that are now accessible because it's easier to get transport.
And it opens up the space for more places to operate.
Exactly.
What last couple of questions, talking about you know the conspiracy theory there that you mentioned. What do you think is the biggest misconception around Davos? And as you mentioned, a lot of people, you know, have a perception because they're not on the ground, they don't see the actual reality of what is happening. But what do you think is some of the biggest misconceptions around this particular week?
The biggest misconception is that people think that Davos is World Economic Forum and that World Economic Forum is Davos. That's the biggest mistake that people make. And in Davos, I mean, I was there, you were there. Did you hear anybody saying, wow, the World Economic Forum said this? Nobody gives a shit. They really don't. Even the people that go to the Congress Center don't care. So I think the biggest misconception that people have, and it's because they're just lazy. Because and because they have their own sort of received wisdom as to how they think the world works, they just sort of imagine some spectre-like super criminal running this World Economic Forum organization. But it's not. The World Economic Forum runs a conference. They have 2,700 delegates. They have 1,100 affiliate badge people, and they have a space in the middle of the promenade. And programming that starts at 7 in the morning and it finishes at 6 p.m. at night. And that's all they have. They don't do events and parties. So I think then what happens is that back in 2008, 95% of Davos was World Economic Forum. So back in 2008, it would be completely fair to say WEF was Davos, Davos was WEF. Now, in 2023, the WEF at most is 40%. And next year, it'll go down to 30% or 35%. Because there's so much extra programming that takes place, which means that the sort of controlled narrative of the World Economic Forum basically gets disappeared because there are other people talking. So I think that's the biggest misconception is that people think that the WEF is Davos, Davos is WEF, And those people are just wrong, completely wrong.
Completely.
But
completely.
I'm sure that they're very happy that they're wrong. Well, actually, they probably think they're right, but they're just happy being right, but they're still wrong.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, as obviously there's a lot of talk this year about the succession planning and the unhappiness of certain people inside the organization and how it's all happening. So I think, yeah, we'll see how things unfold. Mark, thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. And the idea on that one is that there's old WEF and there's new WEF. And the new WEF is much more aligned with UnDavos and allowing people freedom to do the stuff that they want, allowing more interaction, allowing less stage managed stuff. The thing is that old WEF is dying, new WEF is the future. And I think fundamentally, the future belongs to those people that will live in the future. It doesn't belong to the people that control the present who will be dead.
Yeah.
And I think those people that, let's say, own the future need to take some responsibility of making that future happen. And we can make it happen faster. We just have to be somewhat clever about how we do this. But so certainly the direction of travel for Davos itself is to be more open, more diverse, more inclusive, more topics, more depth, and less stage managed fiction that is sort of that the old world sort of espouses.
Mark, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been great speaking with you, and congrats on everything that you do with UnDavos as well. It's really, really great to have to something like you guys on the ground and you know, making that change. So yeah, congratulations.
Well, and thank you for being part of it. I mean, it's the I like to tell people that, like, without you and the people in UnDavos, it would be very lonely for me because it would just be me.
Absolutely. I look forward to speaking with you soon in London. Take care.
Very good. Indeed. Ciao.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we've enjoyed having this conversation. If you want to grab a copy of today's show notes, then head over to missionmakers.com/Davos, where you'll also find notes from all of our previous episodes. If you're interested in talking to me about future opportunities at Davos, producing podcasts, or coming down to some of my music and motorsports events, then you can reach out to me at missionmakers or at dj.n1nja on Instagram and TikTok. Thank you as ever for listening. The music played in today's episode is an exclusive preview of my upcoming track with Deepak Chopra, which was titled Infinite Being at Davos, and it will be coming out later this year. So until next time, keep it laser focused.
We call ourselves human beings, not human thinkings, or not human doings, but human beings. So, you know, as you're listening to me, if you would just try this, as you're listening to me, be aware of that which is listening. Even now, as a border, it's 47 billion light years away from us. But anything that doesn't have a border has to be infinite, which means I is infinite.